Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, friends. It's the Recruiting Animal. I don't have to tell you, I'm angry today! I'm angry! And here's what's bugging me. Issue number one. My audience is driving me crazy. Some of them are telling me that I'm turning into a big sissy. Here's what they're saying. You used to speak the truth to power, dude. We liked you then. Now you sold out to become more popular. And then there's some other guys. And here's what they're saying. Oh, he's too rough. He should give people a chance to talk at their own pace. Well, here's my answer. More popular. More popular. I've gone soft to be more popular. Are you crazy? I couldn't be more popular if I tried. I don't have to go soft to be more popular. But it's true. I have gone soft, and I have to change. So no more Mr. Nice Guy. This is the Recruiting Animal Show. And if you're going to be a guest on this show, you got to get with the program. And rule number one is this. There will be no thinking on this show. You want to think? Think ahead of time. Isn't that why you're here anyway? Because you've already done some thinking and you have something to tell us. And if you already know what you thought about, why can't you just spit it out? Because if you come here and you can't tell us right away what's on your mind, I'm going to spit it out for you. I'll smack you on the back a few times and then watch out. It's the Heimlich maneuver. Anyway, I want you to get this straight to all my guests, past, present, and future. This show is not about you. This show is about ideas. And if you get in the way, well, the train is on the tracks. Issue number two. Last week, I was speaking to some big shot recruiter about the proper role of a corporate recruiter. And here's what he said to me. Well, actually, I won't tell you what he said to me. I'll just tell you that I said to him, this will make a great episode of the Recruiting Animal Show. I want you to come on. And he said, oh, no, I wouldn't touch that show with a 10-foot pole. Wait a second, I said, why not? I thought you were a fan. And he replied, he said, I like watching a disaster. He's got a lisp. I like watching a disaster. But I'm not going to be part of one, he said. And here he went on. He said, I never said that it was an appropriate place for serious discussion. He said, you've got your niche animal, so why don't you stick to it? He said, the clown should never try to take himself seriously. Listen, I said, the Recruiting Animal Show is full of serious discussion. It's full of it. And you know what? I don't get this arrogant attitude anyway that says serious and entertaining have to be kept apart. You always hear these guys whining on TV that Gen Y gets its news from The Daily Show. Well, let me ask you this. What's wrong with that? A spoonful of sugar helps the boring truth go down. That is the truth. And I want you to take it from me because I'm the Recruiting Animal and this is the Recruiting Animal Show!
The werewolf is neither man nor wolf, but a satanic creature with the worst qualities of both. And do you expect me to believe that a man so afflicted actually becomes a wolf under the influence of the full moon? I'm afraid, sir, that I gave up my belief in goblins, witches, personal devils, and werewolves at the age of 6.
The werewolf is neither man nor wolf. You know, that intro never comes on, so I memorized it in case I had to say it myself. I'm back. Don't anyone talk yet. I'm not ready. You know, going back to that complaint that I'm too rough on my guests, I'm going to install an anemometer on this show. That's short for animal meter, an anemometer. And I'm going to let my guests decide how much animal they want on this show.
You're a sissy girl.
They can ask for the sissy level, or they can ask for animal-like, or they can ask for all animal all the time. If they ask for the sissy stuff, they don't get on. Animal-like, I can manage. But I don't think we'll need that today because this time we've got a real man on the show. Jeff Waltman. Jeff Waltman is not only, shut up, not only a recruiter. He has a Master of Social Work degree, and he leads men's workshops. That's right. He gets out the guns and the bows and arrows, and he takes a bunch of wimpy dweebs into the woods and helps them rediscover their masculine selves. Am I right, Jeffrey?
You bitch, you're right. I want all animal.
Yeah, you get all animal. Listen, Jeff, I want you to understand one thing.
What's
I'm going to lead this discussion. You can push back all you want, but if you don't get to the point, I'm going to push you.
No problem.
Are you all right with that?
And I promise I will not think for the next hour.
Very good.
I think he causes mind pollution, as Jeff has figured out.
Very good. Oh, they're very active today, just when I don't want them to be. Anyway.
Oh, shut the hell up.
You know, my advertisers aren't going to like that, Diesel Levy. Anyway,
okay, go have another drink.
I got a question for Jeffrey. Jeffrey, the
what?
First question.
Jeff, not Jeffrey.
I'll call you what I want.
Okay.
I'm the animal. I'm the boss on this show. I told you a few times already.
Shut up, Altman.
How does manliness relate to recruiting? Because in my opinion, the life of a recruiter, and especially a sorcerer, Maureen, is not for the faint of heart. It takes guts to pull off the kind of stunt you told us about to win that sourcing contest. Am I right about that?
You betcha you're right.
Now tell us that story, and then we'll go into the discussion of it.
So, here's what I had to do.
Talk louder.
Okay, here's what I was asked to do that time. I had to find a bunch of computer professionals for one of my clients. So what I did was I called up the switchboard of a large bank in New York, and this is what I did. Ready?
Yep.
Hi, I'm at the airport, and they lost. Does that look like a blue suitcase to you? That's brown, not... I'm sorry, these idiots lost my luggage. And I'm supposed to stay at this guy's house. He's like a programmer or a programmer. No, it's a blue suitcase, not brown. He's like a programmer or a programmer analyzer. And his last name begins with an S. And I'm pretty sure if I heard it, I'd remember it. Could you help me, please? And 400 names later... 400 names later, I had the entire programming department of that bank.
Big Game Hunter strikes again.
Big Game Hunter, that's what you call yourself, right? Yeah.
The Big Game Hunter, that's right.
The Big Game Hunter. Okay, so what year was that?
Oh, many moons ago.
1952, wasn't it?
Okay, so I'm right. It takes guts. It takes chutzpah. It takes gall to be a sorcerer and, we'll talk about it later, a recruiter. You can't have too many qualms about bending the rules or getting caught trying to pull something over on someone, can you?
I can't say about qualms, but I can say that you got to have the courage to be able to do the things that other people are afraid to do.
Okay, but what about... Do you feel, let me ask you this question, do you feel any moral compunction about your fraudulent intent?
Oh, I'm going to cry about what I did years ago. I'm going to weep profusely on the air.
Okay, I'll take that as an answer.
As well you should.
Maureen, Diesel Levy, you can comment now before I move on. Anything?
Well, look, I think ultimately we have the overriding issue here is you have a client has some interesting positions. You have people who potentially could fill those positions, and there has to be a way to hook the two up, and that's where the recruiter fits in. And I don't have any, unless it's illegal, immoral, or fattening with a certain amount of gray area, I don't have a problem. I think the reason I selected Altman is because I laughed out loud because I've done the same thing, and it works fabulously well.
You were the judge. You have to tell, not all listeners know. You were the judge in that
contest. I was the judge of this
contest.
And the contest,
tell them the title of the contest. First of all, let me say it was on the recruitingblogs.com, the new networking site for recruiters from J.D. Jason Davis, the former voice of recruiting.com. Got to give him that plug, okay?
Thanks,
he's having
Mike.
Contests. You're welcome. He's having contests, and Diesel E.V. and Maureen Shareeb, the queen bee of telephone sourcing, ran it, and Jeff was the winner, right?
That's right, and I deserve to win it.
You did deserve to win. I laughed.
Well, actually, Jeff, Brenda DePauw As noted by her entry, she said, I realize this isn't telephone name sourcing, and I'll probably be disqualified for that, which she was. But her tale of marshmallows and golfing were things that
well,
legends
you know
are
what?
Made of.
Brenda can come on another time. We've got Jeff here. Please, don't insult him. Jeff? Jeff?
Yeah.
I want to take
Big game hunter.
It sounds like we're in the Middle East over there. Anyway, I want to take you back, Jeff.
Yeah.
I want to take you way back. The time is 1971. You've just graduated from City College in New York with a degree in political science.
Absolutely worthless to do anything of any value.
And you were in high demand, nevertheless. By whom and why, we want to know.
Three presidential candidates to travel on national staff as a professional young person who would tell them what young people really thought about.
Now, how did you get to that position where you were in demand?
I was a hack politician in New York. I worked for a bigger hack, and I did a good job on a Senate campaign. So people started to hear about me. And I was invited to travel for three of the candidates.
Now, is there anything, the reason I'm dwelling on that, is there anything about career ambition and you know, career management that people in general should know that you were already experiencing, I'm assuming, at age 18 or 19?
Here's what I learned at that time. You have to have something that people want. And I really didn't have a lot that the general economy wanted, but in terms of politics, you know, I was a player at a relatively early age.
What does that mean? What did you have?
I had the courage, the gumption, the ability to organize that a lot of people at that age just had
what does
no
that
clue
mean?
About.
What does that mean?
You know, in politics, circa 1970, back in the Stone Ages,
yeah.
You know, what people wound up doing was very nice,
doesn't
polite
sound like
stuff.
That was the Stone Ages for anyone on this show, but that's another story.
Hey, yeah. I have an audience that I work with that's far younger than I am.
Okay.
So
that'll be 84, Jeff, right?
No, what I'm talking about is 70.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. So, you know, back when, you know, we would do things, you know, pranks to try and ensure that our voters got to the polls.
Like Donald Segretti and Watergate?
Even more fun. Even more fun. The kind of stuff like sending the guys into the conservative voting district. My politics were very different than they are at this time, but back then I was working for liberal politicians, and you'd send guys into the conservative polling places with the baked beans in their system to try and clear out the polling places.
You know what? Saul Alinsky, the radical organizer, he did the same thing. He had a fart in at some classical music concert or something like that.
And we would do it in voting precincts. We would teach people how to break voting machines. We'd go so far as to impersonate, you know, a police captain.
This guy's he's a real pro. I mean, you came up with it. Like, what do your parents do? Are they clowns or something like that? How did you grow up with this? You're a born recruiter. That's what it sounds like to me. That's why I'm asking you. I want to know what kind of person becomes a successful sourcer and recruiter. And obviously you had something at a very early age. Were you born like that?
No, I was actually born timid and meek, and I was supposed to be an accountant.
And?
What happened was I discovered the one man in the world that I could really admire. The one man I could really look to before I met you, of course, Anna.
Okay.
And that is Don Rickles.
Oh, really?
Rickles was my inspiration.
Uh-huh.
My entire personality changed at that point.
Uh-huh.
And he turned me into the baby big game hunter that I was at
okay.
that point.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. The patron saint of a recruiter, Don Rickles.
Don Rickles.
Is he
still
alive, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's doing shows with Wayne Newton in Las Vegas.
Oh, maybe so. Okay.
They're wheeling him out on the stage.
Yeah.
Walker.
You know what? Did he say bite me? Was he the first guy to make that popular?
Yes.
I can't remember.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Bite me. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Okay, so what happened? So when you got out of school, all these guys, you had a shot at, you know, working in the White House, the West Wing, just like those. You know, what's that handsome guy's name on the West Wing who left early? I don't remember.
Rob Lowe?
Yeah, Rob Lowe. You could have been Rob Lowe, right?
Yeah, I didn't have the looks.
Okay.
I've seen Jeff in person.
Okay.
And he'll substantiate that statement. Yeah.
Okay, but you know,
yes.
This was a little while ago. Maybe it was different.
Yeah.
Anyway, so how come you didn't become a cabinet member or something like that?
Well, with a degree in political science, I'm sure you'd want me to run some major department in the
yeah.
government, wouldn't you? How much worse could I do than the guys that have been in office since then?
So what happened?
I did a trip to Chicago for one of the candidates, and I was under surveillance for 3 days.
Yep.
And it kind of threw me for a loop. Like, you know, there was a point where I climbed out the bathroom window and came around a different way and called over to my tail to follow me. You know, it was that kind of a trip. And after that, I decided I had to do something else. And where could I take my skills? Where could I take my knowledge and charming personality? The answer was the recruiting business.
How did you get in?
I answered an ad in the New York Times. Because after all, we use Times, the newspapers.
Yeah, you don't
days.
Have to have this, you know, explanation. If the NY guys don't get it, tough luck for them.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what needs explanation.
Thank you. So I answered an ad in the newspaper, and the headline said, Management Trainee. Inexperienced preferred. And I almost didn't answer because I had no experience. But I said, hey, let me do it anyway. Maybe I'll luck out.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. And I got a wonderful job where I asked for $150 a week, and they wouldn't give it to me. They said I was worth $125.
Yep.
And you know, I broke into the recruiting business, learning all the basic, you know, lie, cheat, and steal techniques that, you know, many of us learned in those days before we became a little bit more honest.
Now, there's some sourcers who say everything they do is ethical elicitation and above board. But in the meantime, what they call as social engineering is really deception, isn't it?
Well, I don't know what they wind up doing. What I used to do back in the olden days, you know, in retrospect, was not clean or particularly honest. That's
okay.
The truth of it.
Uh-huh.
I've cleaned mm-hmm. up my act a lot. I don't really need to do that kind
yeah,
of
maybe
stuff.
Because maybe you've cleaned it up because you're not hungry anymore.
Maybe I do it because I can wind up finding the same talent without that kind of stuff.
Explain that.
How I do it.
Maybe you don't want to give away your secret, but how do you do it without those telephone sourcing techniques, what I call social engineering or unethical elicitation?
For me, it's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I do a lot of things to have people find me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I get a lot of garbage, but you track it, you database it, they sometimes grow up into better. You wind up contacting people, you develop some press, I publish a couple of e-zines
yep.
where people get some ideas about job hunting, because I know I can't help everyone I come into contact with.
Yep.
So I wind up teaching them techniques to find work, and suddenly, the big game hunter is numero uno on a lot of their lists of people to contact.
Okay, are you operating in a, I hope everyone understands me and is following me, he's saying that instead of going out and sourcing people directly in their offices, instead of identifying the people, going out and identifying potential candidates yourself who are passive candidates, hidden potential candidates, instead of doing that, you make yourself easy to find. I assume, though, for only active candidates. So, first of all, we got the question. You said you're using the internet to make yourself visible.
Uh-huh.
They find you, and you're saying you get people who are no good, but is it just a matter then of building this database, and when you get a job order, you
people
go to your
listen.
Database and pull someone out?
People listen. People hear me. Much the same way if you were doing cold call sourcing for someone. People will listen to you. Some will say yes, some will say no. It happens. But, you know, at this point in my career, having done this for 36 years, I've got a pretty good network of people I can get in contact with.
Okay, do you focus on one industry?
I did it for a lot of years, but after 9/11, no. I broadened my experience out into far more areas.
Okay, but then you had to start from scratch, obviously, because you didn't have a database for that field. How did you handle that?
Well, some of it was advertising, some of it was promotion, some of it was using services like what Yahoo and Google provide in terms of groups so that people would find some of the products that I offer and start contacting me, and I would start talking with them, and lo and behold, suddenly the database started to build up pretty well.
Uh-huh, very interesting. Anybody got a comment on that? I'm going to invite the gallery to speak. It's quite different, I'd say.
It's Steve. One of the things, can you hear me now, Jeff?
Can anyone else hear him, yes or no? He's very fuzzy.
Okay, no, I never
this guy has never called on a regular phone, okay?
No, I've never done it. I thought this was reasonable. You know, Jeff, you mentioned that you've got a help and such, whatnot.
Steve, I'm trying to hear you, and you're really coming through.
Are you speaking Spanish?
No. I'll hold off on this one. I'll defer to someone else.
Anybody else? Maureen, got a comment?
Because
he's challenging your technique.
It's just
he's not challenging my technique.
Yeah, he's saying telephone sourcing is not necessary, although he does follow the same other approach as you. He, you know, has these groups where he offers his own expertise as an attraction.
Right.
And I want to be clear. Everything in this business works.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Absolutely.
Every technique works.
That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question of, do you follow through on those techniques?
I just have to take a plug there for my good friend, Larry Lawrence Houghton. He wrote a book called It's Not What You Say, It's What You Do. And
you
he says, any strategy you pick is probably going to work as long as you have the follow through. But that's the hardest thing, especially when you're working with other people. Jeff, do you have any other people working for you?
I have a group of people that I work with. My firm itself here has about 50, 55 people, but I tend to focus in on 3-4 people around me.
So you have 50 people working for you, or you're part of a bigger firm?
I'm part of a bigger firm now.
Okay.
I had larger firms years ago, but frankly, I sold businesses and decided to simplify life.
Uh-huh. Okay, because let me ask you this question. It's kind of a, brought in from nowhere. But I know a guy. I won't mention any names unless he's on and wants to speak up. He is a fantastic recruiter, and he's also very good with very articulate, very entertaining person, and he specializes in a certain field. I think he's on his way up. He came into recruiting from another field, business field. He's a great marketer of his services, and I think a good recruiter as well and sourcer. He was telling me the other day, though, that if you really want to be successful, you can't make yourself into the business, or you can't limit the business to yourself. I don't know if that's true. What do you think about that?
He's absolutely right.
You want to explain that a bit?
Sure, because you're going to always be limited by time, and you only have a certain amount of time to accomplish everything that you want. So given that you may work, if you work like an animal, not necessarily the recruiting
I don't work
animal,
like an animal.
But
just trust me, I'm a bum, but that's another story.
But you know what I'm talking about. If
yep.
if you work 16, 18 hours a day, then you're still going to have a finite amount of time to make contact.
Right.
So what do you do to transcend that? And that's to have support around you in one way or another to make it easy. Technology makes things a lot easier than what I had to deal with in the Stone Ages.
Yeah, the Stone Ages.
But human capital is good, too. I just found that for myself, when I was working with I had businesses like 15, 20 people with me that I own. And my biggest problem was, frankly, I kept having to explain and re-explain and train and retrain and push and cajole. And I wasn't serving my client.
Yeah.
I was spending more time coaching and mentoring
people. That's what that sounds like what's going to happen in any business to me.
Yeah, and for me, I got to a point where I said, I don't want these headaches. I want to make things simple.
Uh-huh.
So my goal as a headhunter, as a big game hunter, is not to necessarily have 50 people working for me or a business that's 500 offices.
Got to be a little louder. Can everybody hear him?
I don't want to have 50 people around me
or
500 offices. I want to have a relatively simple life because I'm also a 56-year-old dad
uh-huh.
with a 6-year-old son at home. I'd like to see him on occasion.
Uh-huh.
So I still work a lot of hours. I'm on my computer at 6 a.m.
Yep.
And I'm off the first time at 6:30, back on in the area of 8:30.
Uh-huh.
But I have a chance to spend some time with my son.
Okay. Now, how do you manage that working on your own, though, right?
You just work hard. You put in effort, and you kind of systematize what you wind up doing in the course of a day.
Okay, so I'm a bit confused. I don't want to belabor the point here, but first you said if you really want to do good business, you can't limit it to yourself. You got to bring in other people. We didn't clarify if those are other recruiters or admin people to do all the monkey work that supports our work, so to leave you free to be on the phone. But now you got sick of that, so you've gone back to your own sort of unique business with it. Sounds like a little coterie around you. Did I get it straight?
You're doing it fine. So where's the inconsistency?
Yeah.
What I would see as you hearing what I'm talking about being inconsistent is I'm making a choice to cap what my potential is.
Okay. But here's one question for that again. I can hear. Are you in that pizza bakery again, Levy?
Yeah.
I can hear your friends there. As long as I know what's going on. But anyway, here's the case. If you're off the phone and you're spending all your time, let's say somebody who expands his or her business, you're spending your time managing people. So essentially, what you're doing is taking the best worker out of commission. Is that a good idea? Maybe really what you need is someone who isn't so hired just as a manager for the other people.
In larger firms, what does the owner wind up doing? The owner winds up being primarily in the business of hiring people and managing the operation of the business. The larger firms don't wind up having him doing, and it's generally a him, on occasion it's a her, have him or her do business development anymore, because his real job is running the operation.
Mm-hmm.
He'll have lieutenants around him that may handle some of the, you know, the problem situations that come up, you know, the fights that occur in the office, the territorial tiffs that come up. But overall, what most of them wind up doing is pulling themselves away, because often they themselves are burned out. They don't want to be doing it anymore. So,
you know,
I'm talking about the big office operations.
Okay. You just mentioned something about these tiffs in the office and things like that. I was reading an article by a guy named Ken, I can't remember his last name, I'll have to look it up, it was on ERE, and he was talking about hiring corporate recruiters, and he said really the problem with corporate recruiters is that they're HR people, and they want a good salary, everything stable, but he said really good recruiters are hunters, not farmers, and these guys, what drives them is competition, low base, high commission potential, special favors like their own private office. If they see someone else has it, they're driven to get that. Now, I'm wondering if since you're a macho guy and you lead these men to discover their true masculine selves, if you believe that a good recruiter's personality is a hunter and what that means to you.
I don't believe it at all. What I find is that there are all sorts of ways that people can be tremendous achievers in this business. Farmers do extremely well. Farmers who open up an account and really nurture it and understand it and milk it to all heck can wind up having 50, 60 people on billing plus do 10 deals a month. What's wrong with that? And suddenly, that's a farmer to you. It's not necessarily a hunter. They're not going out and trying to break down doors and open new institutional business because they don't have to. They may be working with one, two clients real, real well. But
you know what? I got to tell you, from your little antic that you started off the show with in the airport, the call that got all of those programmers, that sounds like a hunter to me. Does anybody disagree with that? That's a tough guy, right? Now you're telling me you don't need to be like that.
Can I say something, Michael?
Yeah,
I think that the theme that I'm hearing here is persistence. If you persist at something, if you keep after something, whether it be hunting or whether it be farming, both are going to produce results, and I think that's what Jeff's saying.
I don't know. I'm having to hold myself back from shouting at him, but, it doesn't matter because all of Diesel Levy's friends are shouting in the background there. I'm getting messages from somebody here. I won't say who. Tell them to shut up.
But
anyway.
That's the missing ingredients for so many people is persistence.
Persistence.
See,
okay.
See, that needs to be the hunger to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
The lazy individual will fail at anything that they do. That's a gift.
Right.
But, the story that won the contest was about the part of the business where you're doing name generation and trying to find the applicant. On the other hand, there's the part of the business that's client-oriented, that's business development-oriented.
Like what?
How do you find the institution who's going to hire from you? How do you nurture that client and have them trust you sufficiently that when you say something, it has meaning and you're not just another commodity provider to them?
How do you do that?
Oh, man, it's time and effort and sincerity and delivery.
About what?
Goods.
No, give me some substance there. What are you talking about?
When you're talking about an applicant, do you sound like you know what you're talking about? Do you know what you're talking about? Or do you say those sorts of silly, foolish things that reveal complete ignorance about your area of alleged specialization?
Well, you know what? That's the same thing again. The guy's name was Kenny Forrester. He wrote a good article on ERE, and one of the things he said is that specialist recruiters do it better. Now, I know there's a lot of good people who disagree with that, but he says that bad hires are often the result of the recruiter presenting a job he doesn't understand to candidates he doesn't know, right? And you're saying that you yourself specialized. Was that a key to your success? Was that a key to building confidence with your clients, just as you're talking about now?
I think I'm extraordinarily well-read for what I do. So I spend a lot of time understanding my clients' businesses.
Give me an example.
So if I'm talking with an offshore professional consulting firm, and understanding about what they're trying to hire in the way of, let's say, an enterprise architect, know, a technology type of job. So I'm understanding the attributes that go into the job, not just simply the technical skills, because, you know, then it's just, okay, does the person have J2EE? Do they have SOA? And the clerk could do that. But what are the human characteristics that they need to have? What's going to make them successful in front of their client and be able to evaluate and assess people for those attributes too, explain it back to the client and have the person deliver the goods just as I described them. Does that make sense?
I don't know. Anybody got a comment? JD, you've been pretty quiet. Any comments on this? We're actually...
Okay. Hey, Jeff, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
I've been enjoying listening to this. I listen much more than I talk on these shows. But my question to you is the majority of the work you do on a retained basis or contingency basis?
Primarily contingency.
It's all contingent.
Primarily contingency. I have done some assignments in each of the last 5 years, but most of my work is contingency-oriented.
Cool. Okay, that's what I wanted to ask.
That was it.
That was it.
JD, no comments on the idea of scaling up. If you're a great recruiter, the only way to be really successful is to hire people to do the work for you?
You need to. You need to hire people.
Okay, but what about the idea of a good guy like Jeff having to waste his time managing these other people instead of being on the phone himself? You're wasting your superstar, aren't you?
Yeah, but I think, you know what, with any sort of growth or any change in your business, you're going to cannibalize something. And for sure, I mean, you know, training people is going to take time away from being on the telephone, but you got to do it because, you know, 10 people can do more work than you can do.
And here's the next question. What do you mean by really good numbers? You know, is a $500,000 a year for a producer a good number?
For one person?
Yeah.
Sure, it's good.
Good. So I'm exceeding that, and I've done it pretty consistently since the post-9/11 recession ended. And
right.
I'm doing this primarily as a solo practitioner.
Really? So. And you're a generalist as well, you're saying, or do you have a few new areas in addition to what you did before that you specialize in?
Because I'm New York-based,
yeah.
I started off doing technology, and my technology work is a national practice. But in the post-9/11 world, I had to adapt because there was no New York technology market, and there wasn't one for 2-3 years. So clients asked me to do stuff like Wall Street operations people, accounting and finance professionals, stuff like that. So I broadened my work to cover territories that I never touched in the 30-some-odd years I was doing this beforehand.
You know what? I really don't understand what you've told us. I'm sorry if I bore anybody, but you said you no longer go out and, like, if you get an order for, let's say, an auditor, you can go out and call a bunch of companies, identify the auditors, and call them. But if you get an order for an auditor and your approach is to build a database over time, how can you possibly hope to fill that position?
I may not. And I'm working hard to do that and a bunch of other things concurrently. Look, as a contingency recruiter, and I'm asked to invest a lot of time in a lot of different directions concurrently.
Uh-huh.
So there are always going to be a certain number of assignments I'm going to fail
on. How many
on.
Assignments do you work on at one time?
I would say right now I'm actively involved with 15 to 20 assignments.
How do you manage that kind of burden?
I work extremely hard, and I use some of the technology tools that are available to me.
Yeah, but really, this is really interesting because you have – I'm going to give you a chance to plug some of your websites now. You use these websites for your business, but also, who knows, you tell us about your websites, because you're not just working on recruiting directly. You do a lot of publishing as well. Am I right about that?
Absolutely. And if you go to my primary website, which is jeffaltman.com, what you'll find is a site where I give away a lot of information to job hunters who are out looking for work.
Yeah.
I think they're sending over the van to pick me up for some previous search I've been involved with. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do it. I'm sorry.
Now that you confessed the political crimes and what you did in that airport so long ago.
He's a marked man.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm hiding under the desk, by the way.
Now, whenever I watch All the President's Men now, and they're, you know, they got Donald, Donald Segretti, you know,
all my old heroes.
Jeff, two words, Jeff, mea culpa.
I was raised Jewish; those two don't apply. And joking aside, JeffAltman.com allows me to position myself in people's minds as a knowledgeable search professional because I provide job hunters with a ton of information about how to find work. From there, they can sign up for two e-zines that I publish, one geared toward helping people find work without me, and the other one toward helping business owners, HR professionals, and hiring managers even make even better staffing decisions.
Now, how does JeffAltman.com help your business? Now, you've said you're helping other people with it. Does it help you as well?
Very simple. I'm building up lists of individuals with skills and backgrounds who I can communicate with all the time.
How do you get them? People who send you email or what?
They go to my website and they find me and they sign up. I promote the e-zines.
They sign up for a subscription?
That's right.
Okay.
And you know how much they have to pay for it?
I'm assuming nothing.
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing.
Is this like the theory, the more you give away, the more you get?
I haven't really positioned it in that way, but part of what I'm trying to do is be an individual who's a resource for individuals and organizations with regard to staffing.
Powerful.
So my brand, The Big Game Hunter, is really designed to help people understand that I'm there to help. My website even allows people to post jobs to jobs and their resume to job boards.
Now, let me ask you this. How do they find JeffAltman.com in the world of who knows? You know, I mean, you're one site out of millions. How do they get you?
They find me in a bunch of ways. One is by referral. One way is through periodic advertising I may do on Yahoo and Google groups, where I promote the e-zine, my site, and a bunch of other things that I'm doing that draws traffic to the site. They may never sign up, but a lot of people do.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And they can also sign up for a group that I have on Google that allows them to receive a daily digest of jobs that I'm working on. So that way the passive hunter who just wants to get a sense of the market, you know, has the opportunity to just receive emails of jobs. They can learn about the job market because I have a blog at thejobmarketblog.com.
You know what? I got to tell you something. I've had a number of blogs, and I could never make a living from the number of readers I have. Mind you, they're recruiter-oriented. Maybe that's the big difference.
I'm targeting a different audience. You're focusing on recruiters. I'm looking at the job hunter.
Yep.
And focusing everything on helping them and the client hire.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm teaching people how to interview. I'm teaching people how to get more interviews. I'm going to have a series of information products coming out in the next couple of months on job hunting called the book and audio are called Get Yourself Hired Now, The Big Game Hunter's Guide to Headhunting Your Next Job and Every Job After That. And there's a search organizer that they can have as well. As a matter of fact, for any of your listeners, if they're interested in becoming an affiliate, I'll wind up paying them a commission for each person that they refer to the site who purchases it. And you know, it'll be a clean operation with affiliate links that will track directly to them. And all they have to do, is, if they're interested, is email me at thebiggamehunter@gmail.com, and you know, I'll be in touch with them at the time that we're ready to publish. Which
okay, and they can also go to jeffaltman.com and get access to that same email address there.
Uh-huh.
Right? Okay. Okay. Now, I don't know. I'm amazed from what you said about your approach of finding candidates. It just baffles me. I'm also amazed by the fact that you said you can work on 15 orders at one time and maintain all these websites as well. Does anybody else find that? I'm sorry, I'm going to be tough. Does anybody else find that absolutely amazing, hard to believe, etc.? Go ahead, Levy.
Yeah, I had a chance to sort of tackle, what was it, Jeff? Was it this week or last week?
Sorry,
doesn't matter.
Can you translate what he's saying?
What language is that?
If you can't hear me, I apologize. Can you hear anything?
What? I gotta,
yeah,
I got
we can hear something. Go ahead.
If you go over to the coffee counter where those other people are, we'll hear you like a bell.
If that were the case, I would do it, but it's not the case. I had a chance to have coffee with Jeff earlier this week.
Yep.
And he is one of those folks with unlimited energy.
Yep.
He's always bouncing around, much like I am, which is why Jeff and I play it along so well. If you can manage your time well and you have boundless energy, and you actually think that you can shove 36 hours of work into a 24-hour day, you can do it. It's when you think you can't do it that you can't do it. It's as simple as that. He can do it.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Jeff, out of like those 15 searches that you have going on at any given time, how many of those will you actually close?
3 to 5 easily.
3 to 5. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's a low ratio, isn't it?
I don't think so.
No, you don't?
Mm-mm. That's what, 35%?
Okay.
You know, a lot of people get wealthy in baseball with those kind of numbers.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I make no profession to doing 100% on any search. No.
Okay, so when you take a search then, and it's that low, you're not taking exclusives or anything like that. If I'm
taking an exclusive, I treat it as an exclusive, and I structure my time in that way. But if I'm doing this on contingency, I want to be a major player in everyone's mind that's contacting me. So, you know, if I'm closing 3 to 5, I'll pick the middle number, 4 out of 15.
Can you talk louder again? You were
sorry. My apologies. If I'm closing 4 out of 15, you know, the average isn't great, but the numbers are still pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but here's what I'm saying. If you like, for you don't have to be retained search to take an exclusive. If you sign up on a contingency position,
mm-hmm.
And you say, look, but just give me 30 days, right? Would you focus on and don't pay me unless I play somebody? Would you focus on that search and say, I am going to fill this one for sure?
My clients would lie to me if they told me they'd give me 30 days. Unfortunately, that's the truth of it. They would say, oh, yes, oh, yes, and then they'd lie to me and tell me they filled it internally, and I'd find out who they hired, and it was an external hire. So I learned a long time ago that there are three jokes in the search business.
Yep.
We've all heard them. How can you tell an applicant's lying to you? Their lips are moving.
Yep.
How can you tell your institutional customer's lying to you?
Yep.
The same way.
Uh-huh.
And how can you tell a search professional's lying? There you have it. So I do my best not to lie to my clients because they're writing the checks to me.
Yeah.
So I want to be as straight with them as I possibly can.
Okay.
I'm not going to fill all their jobs, but I want them to believe that I'm going to be a significant contributor on every assignment that they give
really?
Me.
Really? And so if you don't have any exclusives on these jobs, when you go out and call candidates, will you tell them who your client is? Because then they can just go around you or they can talk to their other recruiter friend and say, there's a position here, present me.
I hate the idea of revealing who my client is.
Really?
From the standpoint of my experience, and again, I've operated in New York in the post-9/11 world, if I reveal who my client is, a lot of these people are walking into networking groups with the price of admission is the name of jobs that are out there.
Yep.
So it's like inviting disaster.
Really? But if you've got an exclusive, then they, you know, you're going to tell the guy, I'm going out, I'm beating the bushes, I'm telling everyone about you. Someone comes in, you know they're coming through me.
And, again, where I'm coming from is I never believe that I've ever been given an exclusive.
Okay, so how do you approach – I'd like to hear your shtick. How do you – what's your spiel when you approach a candidate and you can't tell them about the position? How do you talk
about it? Well, I can tell them about the position. I can describe the institution for
Go ahead. Give us an example. Is it okay?
I'm Jeff Altman. I'm referred to as the big game hunter. I help organizations achieve objectives by hunting down leaders and staff. One of my clients is a global professional services firm. They have about 40, 45,000 people on their staff, headquartered in the U.S., and I think a U.S.-headquartered firm in that market has an advantage because for some of the other offshore firms, advancement opportunities really exist internationally, not domestic U.S. With my client, that's not the case. You can make senior VP here without having to work abroad. They're looking for an individual who, and you describe the job description to them. I've heard some nice things about your work. I want to have a chance to get acquainted with you. Is this a good time? Would it be better if I gave you a call around 7:30 Eastern time?
But that's not a voicemail. That's actually talking to a live person.
That's right.
And you actually say, I am known as the big game hunter?
Why not?
It's odd. I got to tell you, I don't think I'd have the guts.
Yeah, but you know what comes through to me? You know what comes through to me in that delivery? He stays in control.
The issue for me is being the big game hunter. You know, frankly, I got annoyed at having to differentiate.
You've got to talk louder. If you're a big game hunter, you have to have a booming voice.
There you go.
Talking to the receiver. Yes, please.
There you go. So the problem for me became, having been in the search business for 35 years, And I called up and said, hi, I'm a recruiter. How does a firm know anything about me? How does an individual know anything about me different than the guy who's been doing it for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Who also says they're a recruiter and a headhunter.
Right.
So I decided to brand myself. And I have the federal trademark guy. So don't try going out there as the
okay.
big game hunter.
Yeah, don't worry about it. How long have you been doing that?
I've been doing it now for about 2 years. And frankly, my business took off as soon as I started doing it.
Well, wasn't it Gypsy Rose Lee or her mother there that said you got to have a gimmick?
Who are we talking to? Who's on the phone?
You got to have a gimmick.
It's my mom.
Okay.
It's Queenie.
You got to have a gimmick. Is that
he's got a gimmick. Yeah, he's got a gimmick.
And frankly, the brand is a strong brand.
Yeah,
people
is.
Remember it. You know, it's very rare that I get the email that's critical of the name. On occasion, I get something from India where in some way it may be sacrilegious. But,
but they don't get it.
Well, they do. They just don't like
yeah.
it. Now they have the historical and religious
They
reason.
Don't get it.
But for us in Western cultures, it's an attractive name because they understand the parallel with Headhunter right away.
I've never heard anything like it. Anybody else?
It's brilliant.
you got a friend.
She's my pal.
But here's the thing. You're telling us essentially that you're only calling people from your database who know you already in some way. Is that right or wrong?
What I've done is in some way, shape, or form, I know something about them. I may not necessarily know a heck of a lot about them, but I know something about them. They know something about me because when you go to my website, there's a photo of me and there's audio of me.
I got to tell you, you know, you sound friendly. Your picture is not friendly. Okay,
oh, that big friendly smile. Come on.
It's all teeth.
Fangs, please.
You sound like you got that big smiling face like Howard Adamski. He was on.
Yeah, he does. He does. You're right.
And
it's a great voice.
It's that New York sound, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, this is very interesting. Yeah. And now I had another question when you were doing the script, and I can't remember what it was. For instance, when you say, I've heard some good things about you, to me that, now maybe because I'm jaded, that sounds so canned and you really don't know anything about the person. You just said you did. Is that true or not?
Sometimes I do. More often than not, let's put it this way. I may know a couple of things about them. Some people I may have a lot of in-depth information that may be about a year old.
Yeah.
Or 3 years old.
Uh-huh.
And at which point I'll acknowledge and say, we had some contact a few years back when you were working for so-and-so, doing such and such. I'm kind of extrapolating out from there and think you might have this kind of experience. If I'm wrong, I apologize for wasting your time. So, you know, I try and keep the conversation as clean as possible so that... Yeah, I don't want to start off with a lie, believe it or not, and create any reason for them to distrust me, because frankly, everything I'm trying to do is to foster trust and rapport. Because if we're, you know, frankly, what I care about is the end game. Yeah, if they have reason to distrust me, closing is going to be next to impossible because they're not going to believe a word that I say.
Okay, actually, you listen to Harry and the Losers. Am I right about that?
I listened to half of Harry and the Losers before my son demanded my attention.
Okay, did you listen to the part about selling people on a job? Lottie Miss Claudie, Pam Claughton, I think that's her name, she said it's not good to sell too hard because then you're getting the person to do something you want, not what they want, and that leads to repercussions. You just said you're going to close people. That implies selling. Want to talk about that?
Yeah, because it depends on what you mean by closing. If you're talking about Glengarry Glen Ross closing, coffee is for closers. No, I don't do that kind of selling. My selling is anticlimactic. I'm drawing them into me. I want them to like me and trust me. I want them to believe that everything I'm telling them is true, because 99% of what I'm saying, frankly, is. And the other 1% may be an error on my part rather than something by intention. So I want them to trust me so that when it comes time later on to what we all call close the deal, it's easy. I have a relatively few turndowns that I ever get in a year because along the way, I've been learning what they're really looking for, what their financial requirements are, what their needs, wants, and desires are. I'm asking them along the way and retesting it along the way, with the result being that by the time we get to the end, it's easy.
Well, you know what? I got a couple of burning questions. At what point do you tell them who the company is?
When the client wants to meet them.
Okay. And if the client doesn't want to meet them, how do you turn them off?
I'll tell them the truth. My client wasn't interested in getting together with you. I wish it were different, but that's the fact of the matter. And, I hope to be back in touch with them at a later date about something else.
And if they say why, what was wrong with me?
I'll tell them what it was.
Give me an example.
They really wanted someone with offshore background. They thought your background in fund accounting was good, but they wanted someone with a little bit – they wanted someone with, at this particular time, hedge experience rather than this kind of mutual experience.
Well, you know what? That says to me, though, that you have to know what you're talking about unless – because if the guy says, look, he's wrong. I've got this and this and this. If you don't really understand what he's talking about, what are you going to do then? Or just say, look, I don't want to argue with you about this. Buzz off.
Well, hopefully early on I've discerned whether or not they have the matching skills. If I'm hearing them talk the talk, but the resume doesn't walk the walk, I'll send them back on a homework assignment to revise the resume.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I tell them and the resume doesn't back up the play, what's my client going to think? They're going to think I'm lying.
Uh-huh.
So I'd rather have a document that backs up what the client is looking for that they claim to have proficiency in.
Well, I had another great question, but someone else wants to talk? Did someone say something?
I said that's smart.
Okay. Now, I can't remember what my question was. And it's your fault, Maureen. What was it, Jeff? Do you want to tell me?
Well, I just want to say that most recruiters, most search professionals, like most individuals, keep sending out the same resume, flipping them like they were burgers in a fast food restaurant,
mm-hmm.
over and over again. And frankly, the broken watch is right twice a day, but you can improve the odds with tailored resumes.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're sending out easing articles about that, telling people how. Essentially, which is what Microsoft Jobs blog does. I won't go there right now. I remembered what I wanted to ask you. So you're willing to take on 15 search assignments at one time. Obviously, you don't put the same amount of attention into all of them. How do you decide which one you're going to work on and how much do you work on it? Or is it just you look in your drawer and see, do I have a guy like this?
The old drawer technique.
About 1970 and so on. We had them then.
I do remember those days. But the fact of the matter is you make it sound like 15 assignments started this afternoon when they all have an ebb and flow. The 15th assignment may arrive as the first one closes out, completing it in one way or another. So now I'm at 14, and the next two or three start moving along, and I'm starting to schedule second and third interviews on some of those when two or three new ones show up in my lap. So given the ebb and flow that naturally occurs,
How do you decide? Now you got to what's it called? Arbitraging, or when that's the stock term. Triaging. In a hospital, they triage. They prioritize the wounds, the needs. So you take a look at your searches. You obviously really sort them hard. You say, I've got a lot of competition on this. I'm not going to work it. Or this one looks like something really good for me. Is that what you do? I mean, you obviously don't put the same amount of work into every search. Am I right about that?
Of course. And what I'll say to you is, over the course of time, you develop touch. And it's probably the best term I could use for it. You develop a touch for where you should be stepping in and where you should be stepping out. One of my clients called me, and he said, you've always worked the bizarre jobs extremely well for me. I've got an odd job. I won't give it to anyone else, he volunteered. Again, I don't believe him.
Yeah.
But he said, and he called me up about this HR director in Miami to cover Latin America for him. And, the long and the short of it is you develop a feel for where you should invest your time and where you need to dive back into something to rescue something or to just push it along and where you need to start fresh.
Okay, here's another question. Next week we're having on Russell Moon, who's he's like the Shally of Wachovia, I'm going to say. I hope Shally doesn't get mad at me. He sounds like a great guy. He's the internet sourcer for Wachovia Bank. I think he supports about 150 recruiters there. And I'm wondering what you think about internet sourcing. We've got Louis Vong from Second Life. He's the TMP guy who runs the Second Life show there. He's coming on after that. So those are both online things. I'm wondering, let's talk about internet sourcing. You do any of it? Is it of interest to you? Because obviously you're talking about then and now, and that's now.
I love it. I love it. Going back in time, it was a lot harder to find out about people than it is now. But and you had a ruse in order to do it. Now you can operate a lot more simply, cleanly, and time efficiently by doing internet sourcing.
Well, what do you
you're
mean
thinking,
by internet?
You're thinking there. I heard you.
Well, I mean, but it sounds like what's internet sourcing for you? Just looking up who the officers are listed on a company website, or you're using these kinds of special technologies like Black Widow, et cetera, and harvesting all the names on a website?
You know, I'm not harvesting all the names on a website. I can use job boards. I can use Google. I can use a variety of different tools and techniques. You can use a talent hooker.
The real guys, very few of my candidates, I think, are the people I'm looking for are online. That's just my experience. They might show up in a newsletter from their trade association, but generally speaking, unless they're a VP or something like that, they're not going to be on the company website.
You're absolutely right, but they may be on a job board. Why not?
A job board. So you subscribe to, I don't know, Monster or something like that? Or
my firm provides access to quite a few of them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you work with some other organization. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And the reason for that, again, is?
Because, frankly, we find that we're in a sneaker race. We're competing with other firms to supply talent to organizations. And unless we do it quickly and expeditiously and get people onto their calendar early, we never have time for any of this sort of longer cycle recruiting that may occur.
So why are you with another company instead of totally on your own, Ayatollah?
The answer is access to resources, simplicity, and support. I've had large firms for a lot of years. I just didn't want the headaches anymore.
Okay. Okay, we're coming to the end. I'm not going to say
goodbye.
I'm not going to say goodbye yet. You've been a great guest. I want to give anybody else a chance who's got to want to challenge you. We didn't even get to talk about the men's groups, okay? So we'll have to do that another time. Anybody want to say something to Jeff? 4 minutes left. No?
Okay. Nope.
I want to say something. Last week, I said, if anybody wants to see Shally's events, go to jobmachine.net. It got cut. It didn't get published. So I'll say that again. Maureen and Steve, do you want to talk about the Sorceranos or the Sorcerer's Guild or something like that for a minute? I can't hear you. Don't speak that language.
Well, the Sorceranos is a new series that Steve has created. It's running on the Edge. I'll be contributing to it.
RecruitingEdge.blogspot.com?
Correct. I'm sorry.
Not the Recruiting Edge, RecruitingEdge.blogspot.com, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And it's about the story of Tony Sorcerano and the Dynamo Group. And I think you'll all
the what group?
The Dynamo Group, and I think you'll all enjoy it.
Is Jeff Altman in it? He's a Hesh.
He might be.
He plays Hesh.
He plays Hesh.
Hesh from The Sopranos? Oh my goodness! Hesh has far more hair than I have.
and the other news is we've just formed what's called the Sorcerer's Guild.
Yep.
And it will become a professional organization for people that are involved in name sourcing. And right now it's a Yahoo group. We're creating a website for it, and we will be moving the membership to the website very soon. And we're very excited about it.
Okay.
And we hope you all will take a look at it.
Now, Jeff, you know, I just feel so hysterical today. I had to control myself, but you managed, do you want to say anything about the men's group in the last 2 minutes or make a final plug for your websites?
So I'll try and do both in 2 minutes.
Okay.
The men's
group, we can keep talking, but it won't be on tape, and we want posterity to carry this.
So
go ahead.
The men's group is called the Mankind Project at www.mkp.org. It's an international men's organization that helps men look at the things in their life that work and don't work in a relatively supportive environment where there are more guys working with them to help them than there are attending the weekend. And this is an international organization that runs these trainings throughout Europe, the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Asia. And for my own website, again, jeffaltman.com, thebiggamehunter.net, thejobmarketblog.com, these are all places where I'm marketing and promoting myself and drawing people to it. You can subscribe to my e-zines at two of those three, and thank you for having me on. It's been an absolute delight. And you don't even bite so hard.
No,
for that big werewolf stuff, that big werewolf lead-in, boy, I was. I'm too tough on people. I'm too wimpy on people, man.
I'm getting spun around by these guys. I can shout. But I didn't do it.
There you go.
Okay, then. I'm going to say goodbye to everybody. Thank you for being on. So long.
Bye.
Bye.